Take our Bibles over to Luke chapter 11, and I promise we'll get to the miracle in chapter 13 in just a couple minutes. But please take your Bibles to Luke chapter 11, and we're going to pick up about verse 30. It really is a joy to get to be with you guys and a joy to be able to worship our God this morning. So as you're looking at Luke chapter 11, what I want you to do as we come back to this section is to think about what time woke up. And you realize that you didn't set an alarm and you saw the clock and you're like, oh no, now that I see that it's 7:45, I've got 5 minutes to like get up and get in the car and get to work, because the time that it is demands an immediate reaction. And there are lots of times that like the kids will ask us, they know in our house you can't play video games until after 11 a.m. What time is it, Dad? Is it 10:45? Is it 11 yet? The time that it is requires a response. Look at Luke chapter 11. Jesus is showing us what time it is. He says in verse 30, just as Jonah became a sign to the Ninevites, so the Son of Man will be to this generation. The Queen of the South will rise up with the men of this generation at the judgment and condemn them, because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, something greater than Solomon is here. You know, if it was time to get up and travel to go hear Solomon, how much more with Jesus walking on the earth was it time to go pay attention to him? Verse 32, even the men of Nineveh will stand up with this generation at the judgment and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. Behold, something greater than Jonah is here. In this section of Luke's book, he's actually showing that it's time to repent. It's like time to make a decision about who Jesus is. Come forward in chapter 12, down to verse 51. Chapter 12, verse 51. Do you suppose that I came to grant peace on earth? I tell you no, but rather a division. For from now on, five members in one household will be divided, three against two and two against three. Do you see that it was time to make a choice? Like, which side are you going to be on? We have these expressions in our English language about being in the middle of the road. And we're like, no, don't be in the middle of the road. Pick this side or that side. Or someone who's riding the fence, they should be in this field or in that field. The point Jesus is making, hey, it's time to make a decision. Are you with the three? Are you with the two? What have you become convinced of? Come a little further into chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 54. He was saying to the crowds, when you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say, a shower is coming, and so it turns out. Remember that in Israel, to the west was the Mediterranean Sea. So if a cloud was coming in from the ocean, obviously it was full of moisture. They're like, yep, here comes a cloud. It's going to rain. Verse 55, when you see a south wind blowing, you say it's going to be a hot day. Well, what was to the south? The desert. If wind is blowing from the desert, yeah, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out it's going to be a hot day. Verse 56, you hypocrites. You know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and the sky. Why do you not analyze this present time? When you see the time, it demands a response. And so here in Luke chapter 13, in verse 10 through 17, there is this miracle that demands a response. And the title of the lesson is on purpose. Like, I'm convinced. When I look at this, I know what side of the road I want to get on. When I look at this miracle, I know what side of the fence I want to get on. And I hope that as we study this morning, it causes you to be convinced about who Jesus is and how we want to serve him. So read with me beginning in verse 10, just down to verse 13. And he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And there was a woman who for 18 years had had a sickness caused by a spirit. She was bent double and could not straighten up at all. And when Jesus saw her, he called her over and he said, woman, you are freed from your sickness. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made erect again and began glorifying God. Think about what Luke is telling us here. Do you see in these first few verses that he's writing from the perspective of a doctor? This is a guy with outstanding intelligence and great compassion. As a doctor, as a caregiver, he's basically devoted his life and his talents to being compassionate to people, to helping people recover. This is a brilliant guy. But Luke has figured out that Jesus heals us of the most significant illness. That Jesus fixes things that he as a doctor could never fix. And so his life devoted to healing people is just replaced by a life devoted to spiritually seeing people healed. You can see his doctor's mentality in verse 10 to 13 because it's like a write-up of the woman's condition. Have you ever been to the doctor's office and he pulls out his little recorder and he makes notes about your appointment because somebody's going to transcribe that later? Look at what Luke has done. Who's the patient? Well, it's a woman. What's her problem? She's bent over. How long has it been going on? 18 years. What's the severity? She can't even straighten up in even the littlest way. What's the cause of this? A sickness, or sickness caused by a spirit. She's showing there's both a physical and a spiritual component to what's going on here. And he's just like a doctor working through those first few verses. But Jesus changes everything. Verse 13, not just speaking to her, but a doctor knows about bedside manner. A doctor knows about having care for the patients. Verse 13, he laid his hands on her. And immediately, she was made upright again. Do you understand that in the Gospel of Mark, Mark uses the word immediately to advance the story, right? Mark is always saying in chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, like immediately this, immediately, immediately, immediately. Like he's just going from one story to the next. When Luke uses the word immediately, it's not like a lyrical or narrative device. Luke's saying, no, this is how quick she was healed. Because Luke knows all about like physical therapy and things that take a long time to work on the body. But no, immediately, verse 13, this woman is healed. He laid his hands on her and she was set free. Now, what should we conclude just based on those verses? Well, we should conclude that Jesus has some kind of power that was beyond a regular doctor's, right? We should conclude that Jesus has some kind of compassion for her and even notices the spiritual implications of what's happening here. I would want to just remind you as we get into the lesson this morning that Jesus never expected us to follow him without a little evidence. Never expected us to follow him without paying attention to what he was doing. In John chapter 10, verse 37 and 38, he said, if you don't believe, believe because of the works. If I don't do the works, you don't have to believe. But stop and really consider the works that I've done. And if these works show supernatural power, then you've got to conclude that I'm not just your everyday regular guy. So he gives us time to investigate. But with this miracle, as we keep reading, I want you to notice, nothing else is really said about the woman. Everything shifts to a synagogue official that saw the miracle. And I got to tell you, when I started like studying this chapter and decided I was going to preach on this chapter, I thought, oh, this is a great one. We'll just talk about Jesus and we'll talk about his power and his compassion and his sincerity and boom, 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 1, 2, 3 points. It's deeper than that. We'll get to Jesus in just a second, but the text focuses on the response of this synagogue official. What do we do when we have seen a miracle like this? What do we do in this section of the book of Luke when it's well past time for people to actually make a decision? I want you to see his rejection of Jesus in this passage. Pick up with me in verse 14. The synagogue official, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, began saying to the crowd in response, there are 6 days in which work should be done, so come during them and get healed, not on the Sabbath day. But the Lord answered him, and he said, you hypocrite, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead him away to water him? And this woman, a daughter of Abraham as she is, whom Satan has bound for 18 long years, should she not have been released from this bond on the Sabbath day? So as he said this, all of his opponents were being humiliated, and the entire crowd was rejoicing over all of the glorious things being done by him. Look at the objection this synagogue official raises in verse 14 about Do this 6 other days, but don't do this on the Sabbath day. I would tell you that the objection itself reveals a couple of things. And please don't try to write down everything on the slides. We can print that for you later. I put most of my notes up here. Look, he knew Jesus performed a miracle. Even by saying, do this some other time, he knew Jesus had been active. And he believed Jesus could and would do it again. You notice at the end of the section in verse 17 that they're rejoicing over all the things he's doing. It's not an isolated event. And yet, knowing he performed a miracle, knowing he had the power to do it again, he still would not say, oh, clearly, you're in charge today. He wants to be in charge that day. He's the synagogue official, and every Sabbath is to go the way he wants it to go, right? But this one isn't going like all the other Sabbaths. Now Jesus has the authority to step in and to act with God's power. And this is just disrupting the synagogue official's expectations. We need to think about this rejection carefully, because he's trying to remain in the middle. He's trying to say, okay, Jesus, you can heal, just don't do it like on this day where I run the show. You do it on one of these other days. So he doesn't directly condemn Jesus, but really he does. See, he's not directly attempting or criticizing Jesus. Instead, he was rebuking the crowd. Notice verse 14, because Jesus healed on the Sabbath, he began saying to the crowd, there are 6 days in which work should be done. You come during them. It's not that he's going to look at Jesus. Do you get that this is the cowardly way, right? I mean, if he really believes what Jesus did was wrong and a violation of God's law, he should have looked at Jesus and said, you don't heal these people today. But he won't look at Jesus. He goes and looks at the crowd. You don't come to get healed today. See the cowardliness in this? So he won't directly criticize Jesus, and he's proposing a compromise that is actually a denial. Now, there's a time for compromise, right? Every married person here knows that sometimes you got to find a compromise. This is not a healthy compromise. This is not like you wanted tacos and I wanted Italian, but we'll settle for burgers. Like, this is not a healthy compromise. This is, I'm pushing back on what Jesus is allowed to do. And remember that this woman here is described as not just having any illness, but having an illness that is a spiritual component. Look at verse 16. Satan has bound her for 18 long years. The very fact that he would say, no, 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 this can wait till tomorrow, this can wait till tomorrow, it's a little bit like giving Satan the upper hand and allowing the work of Satan to continue rather than the work of God. He's more committed to the status quo than he is to the truth. And that's where we get challenged. How many times can we be like the synagogue official, unwilling to commit even when the evidence is clear? Unwilling to say, okay, I need to change. I need to accept something that's a little bit outside of the status quo. I need to get ready to give Jesus all authority. I need to know what time it really is. Let's dig even deeper into the synagogue official. And again, I put a lot of this on the screen. What's so wrong about this approach when I do it, or when you do it, or when this guy did it? The first is he's being driven by anger, not humility. Isn't that sometimes what happens to us? Somebody does something outside of our traditions or outside of the status quo, and then rather than being humbled by it and going, whoa, they were right, we get angry. Oh, but it just shouldn't happen that way. You just can't do that right now. This guy is indignant, according to verse 14. And if anger is our first response, especially to the work of God, then we have a heart problem. And that's, again, why I would say this is not one of those healthy compromises. Not only is it anger-driven, it's not a beneficial compromise. It's pushing back on Jesus' authority. I just wonder, the synagogue official, what would he have done if it was his mother that had been bent double for 18 years? Would he have told her to wait till the next day? If it was his wife, if it was his daughter, what would he have said? See, he's not just saying, oh, this is the best way for everyone to get what they need. Instead, it's the way for him to get what he wants. Hold the status quo. Don't disrupt the apple cart. He's pushing back on Jesus' own authority. And it doesn't bring peace. If they had just followed what his recommendation here, it would cause loss. It would cause more suffering to continue. It would be delayed. And that's just not right. We should be wanting God's will to be done, as we just had a great Lord's Supper talk. We want God's will to be done right away and for Him to receive the glory. And ultimately, it's not even consistent with their own discernment or practices. Look at verse 15 again. What did Jesus say? You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead him away to water him? They all know that there are things that should be done on the Sabbath for the health and well-being of others. And every one of them would not even hesitate to jump up and take care of their own household. And yet he is criticizing Jesus' immediate response. And the horrible thing about this hypocrisy is that it doesn't value this woman highly enough. Notice the phrase that's used here. She is called a daughter of Abraham by Jesus. Verse 16. Do you know how Luke uses that term? Luke uses that term, a daughter or a son of Abraham, in really a very high place. It's over again in chapter 19 with Zacchaeus. Remember when everybody's grumbling because they don't want Jesus to go to Zacchaeus' house? And he says, but today salvation has come because he's a son of Abraham. To be called a child, a son or a daughter of Abraham, was to say, you had faith like Abraham. And Jesus sees in this woman great faith. And sees in this woman someone that is created in the image of God, someone who is to be valued. And what's the point of verse 16 again? They treat their animals better than they treat this person. And that's the bottom line. And Jesus won't stand for it. We are to be convinced that He is right and that treating animals better than people is wrong. And that if you would immediately, without hesitation, take care of your animal, how can not immediately, without hesitation, take care of this woman? His compromise is giving Satan another day of victory, and it proves to be shameful for anyone claiming to be a child of God. You just can't come in, verse 14, saying, oh, let's do it this way. 6 days work to be done. Let them come, but not on the Sabbath day. Jesus' response becomes so obviously correct. He so perfectly diagnoses the middle of the road mentality that this guy is trying to have, that the separation happens in verse 17. You're either with him or you're against him. All of his opponents were humiliated, right? Because they see that, yeah, there's just no middle ground here. But the entire crowd was rejoicing over all of the glorious things being done by him. What are those glorious things? Let's get to what I thought were going to be the main 3 points of the lesson, right? His power. Aren't we convinced? Even in this one miracle, if you didn't know any other miracle, how can you immediately heal someone that's been sick for 18 years? He has the power to overcome both physical and spiritual sickness. He has the power to overcome long-term problems. He has the power to overcome unmovable difficulties. Sign me up. That's who I want to stick with. That's who I want to follow. I don't want to follow people that offer hopelessness. I don't want to follow people that have no real power. We all have those long-term things that we need help with. I want to lean on Jesus to overcome those kind of struggles. But not just power, compassion. He speaks both truth and freedom. He reaches out with gentleness and healing. And He acts to unbind from suffering and from the man-made rules that this synagogue official had. Now, I would want to follow Jesus just because of the divine power that He demonstrates. But the fact that He exercises that power with compassion is why we say, worthy, worthy, worthy is the Lamb. Right? That He lays His life down for us. That He cares about us. This power and this compassion are incredible. I've kind of fallen in love with this phrase, things that move the needle. You know, I think about like the tachometer in your car or even just the gas. I want to move the needle. I want to get off of empty and back to full. I want to move the needle in people's life. Do you see how Jesus, with both His power and His compassion, He's the one that moves the needle. And so sometimes people come to church and they're like, yeah, I need that. I would really like that. And they like are interested in what Jesus can do for them. And what do they find? They find guys like this synagogue official. And they're like, ooh, this is disappointing. This is not what I was looking for. I just want to say for just 1 minute, if you have been hurt by one of Jesus' followers, remember that all the followers, we mess up. But it's Him. He's the one that's perfect. He's the one that has the sincerity right. He sees our shortcomings, sees our hypocrisy. He calls us on it and asks us to change. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you've been hurt by a Jesus follower, please don't confuse that with Jesus Himself failing. Because Jesus never fails. He has the power. He has the compassion. He has the sincerity. He shows the very best of what it means to walk with God. And hopefully it's studies like this that take us to the text that make each of us say, yeah, yeah, I need to get out of these old habits of the synagogue official. I need to be more in line with Christ. So we said the psalm before the lesson, that very first line, making Christ our King. The decision time is He going to actually be our King? So here's the question I want you to consider. Jesus calls out in verse 15, there is something that every one of them would do. Each of you on the Sabbath would untie his ox. What about me? What would I do with zero hesitation? Look, if I find a brand new F-150 on sale for $5, I'm buying it with zero hesitation. You know, like there are some things that we're going to pull the trigger on with zero hesitation. Following Jesus is supposed to be like that. Knowing His power and His compassion, His holiness, His worthiness, His sincerity, we are supposed to have zero hesitation. If they would jump up to care for their animals, won't we jump up to care for each other? Why? Why are they so quick to lift their ox out of that ditch on the Sabbath? Well, they don't want to push a plow through the hard dirt all by themselves. They want that big, strong farm animal in the front, right? Doing most of the work. They want the muscle power of that animal to make themselves rich, to put food on their table. And so they're not going to leave that behind. We need to have that attitude that we don't leave each other behind. We're a family. We're here to lift each other up. And it's not just about my own self-interest. It's what's good and right for others around us. We need to have zero hesitation to treat Jesus as our King and to do what's right even when it doesn't match our expectation. Can you just pick out some gold nuggets in the rest of the chapter with me? In verse 18 down through verse 30, He shows what His kingdom is going to be like. In verse 18, what is the kingdom of God like? To what shall I compare it? It's like a mustard seed, which a man took and threw into his own garden, and it grew and it became a tree, and the birds of the air nested in its branches. That is not what the Jews expected. They were thinking the kingdom was going to be, you go to bed one night, you wake up the next day, Rome is gone, and the Messiah is on a throne in Jerusalem. It just, bam, happens. Jesus says, have you seen how long it takes a tree to grow? My kingdom is more like that, like a mustard seed, gradually growing over time. That's not what they expected. Come with me just a little bit further. You see, Jesus in verse 24, strive to enter through the narrow door, for many, I tell you, will seek to enter and will not be able. I thought this was going to be easy. I thought everybody could just come. He says, no, no, no. You're going to have to put forth effort. You're going to have to strive. There are going to be some that attempt it, but they do not succeed. There are some who seek to enter that will not be able. Verse 25, once the head of the house gets up and shuts the door, you begin to stand outside and knock, saying, Lord, open to us. He will answer and say to you, I do not know where you are from. He's saying, not only is it time to make a decision, but like the door is closing. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. His way is narrow. It calls for our effort. If we really want Him to be our King, again, think about verse 17. We've got to choose which side we're going to be on. Are we going to stand with God, or are we going to be like the rest of the world? There is so much pressure around us to compromise our morals, our values, to just blend in with the rest of the world. We've got to be like Daniel, who purposed in his heart, right, not to defile himself with the king's choice foods. Like, what have we purposed in standing with God? Look at verse 22 through 30 again. This group that is deciding to follow Jesus. We see in verse, let's see, 26. Then you will begin to say, but we ate and drank in your presence, and you taught in our streets. They'll begin to say, but I was right there. Like, I was in the proximity of Jesus. I was near Jesus. You were in our streets. You ate in our presence. Verse 27, but he will say, I tell you, I do not know where you are from. Depart from me, all of you evildoers. See, it would be one thing to say, oh, I was in the proximity. I sat in the pew, or I was from this family I was born and raised in. He says, proximity is not enough. The synagogue official is in the proximity of Jesus. But the question is, will we really follow him? Verse 28, in that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when you see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, but you yourselves being thrown out. But they would say in verse 28, but no, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, those are my people. And Jesus says, not if you don't have the faith that they have. Not if you don't submit to me the way they submitted to me. The ones who enter his kingdom are convinced that now is the time to act. We don't want to be like the end of verse 28, those that were being thrown out. So here, let me bring the whole lesson together. I am convinced it's time for me to follow Jesus. And I really hope you are convinced that the time is there, that the evidence is there to follow Jesus. So there's a couple of choices that are there for this. Number one, I don't want to be with the grumbling opponents in verse 17. Remember that group that were just like, oh, I don't like he's doing things. I don't want to be with that group. If I have to choose between one of two groups, I want to be with the people that are rejoicing, saying, look at his compassion and look at his power. That's the group I choose to be a part of. And I don't want to be with the ones that are full of anger and pride. Oh, he didn't do what I expected. I don't like the way he does these things. I want to be with the ones that are, whoa, that is not at all what I expected. He has exceeded my expectations. This Messiah, his kingdom, is bigger and better than I could have ever imagined. And guys, I don't want to treat animals better than people. I want to treat people better than the traditions. If following Jesus means some of my traditions need to change, then so be it. Let me walk with Jesus. I want to have that perspective. And I don't want to just grasp it, trying to defend this middle ground. I have a shirt that I wear to the gym sometimes that says all in. It's like it was on sale at Old Navy and I just picked it up. I like it. All in. I don't want to be lukewarm. I don't want to be riding the fence. Let's just go all in. That's what Luke is saying should be happening in this section of his gospel. And the Queen of Sheba, she went all in. Let's go hear Solomon. The people of Nineveh, they went all in. They repented at the preaching of Jonah. The question is, am I ready to go all in? Jesus, whatever you say, yes, I'm with you. And finally, I don't want the clock to run out where I was hoping in the wrong things. I don't want the clock to run out going, oh, but my family, or oh, but my place, oh, but my position, or oh, I've seen you, I've heard of you. I want to be saved, healed, and set free by Jesus like this woman was. A true child of faith, a descendant of Abraham. And Galatians tells us that's what we are when we put on Christ in baptism, that we are children of God that receive this inheritance that has been promised from so long ago. Guys, I'm convinced, and I hope that you are convinced as well, to follow Jesus with all that you are. If you need to be baptized this morning, we stand ready to help you take that step. If you've stumbled in sin, we've all been there before. We stand ready to lift you back up. We would have zero hesitation in praying for you or in helping you take whatever step of obedience is right. If you just let your need be known while we stand and while we sing.